said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving.
Natural running, running car.
Tell him it's your car and you do what you want with it.
I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes pay for that. They're both mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything, God.
Welcome to the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Eric Stahl.
And I'm Daryl Scott.
And welcome to another episode of the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
The auto podcast that Peoria deserves, or is it desires? Did we change that up?
I thought maybe I'd hip it up a little bit. Yeah. I thought the auto podcast that Peoria desires.
That sounds a real highbrow.
Well, I didn't really think of it that way. I just thought it sounded a little better than deserves. Because what Peoria deserves.
That's pretty bold.
It's arguable, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, just in case you forgot, we are a member of the Peoria Podcast Alliance. We love those guys. And check out PeoriaPodcastAlliance.com. I believe that's the website. All the great Peoria podcasts are there.
That's right. And we, if you have just joined us for the first time, are a couple of gearheads, and we enjoy what we do. I'm Daryl Scott. I've got a bunch of old vehicles in my garage that I try to keep running, but also been a lifelong gearhead, worked on mostly Chevys, and I've kind of strayed from that over the years. And my partner, Eric, well, I'll let him describe himself.
I am kind of a car guy. I work in the car business every day. I'm the service manager at a local metro dealership in Peoria, and I have fun on the weekends, maybe off-roading or maybe hitting the autocross track. So, yeah, Daryl's a professional broadcaster, and I'm the professional car guy all day, so there's your mix.
And we would like to say a special thanks to some other professionals that we had the pleasure of speaking with on the last show. I'd like to say a nice shout-out to Matt Carter and Nick Whitaker at Detail Peoria. Matt was kind enough to open the doors and let us see their new facility in North Peoria and kind of give us a tour and walk us through a lot of the detail process that goes on to goes into making a car look its best, whether it's old, new. It was a wonderful show. And if you haven't downloaded that or listened to it, you might want to give it a shot. It's episode 13. It's right before this one.
Yeah, so the owner of my store heard that show, and he has an old Cuda, original like 67 Cuda. Okay. He's like, you think I should take it up there and have those guys get it ready to go if I want to sell it? And I'm like, yeah.
Good idea. they might do just fine.
The chrome that's on that car could glisten again. It might look better than showroom, kind of like what they were doing those other Chrysler products, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they looked dynamite. So we are on the road again because we like being on the road, like the Willie Nelson song, On the Road Again.
Onward and upward. That's what I always say, Daryl.
And we'd like to introduce this week's special guest. Eric, I'll go ahead and toss this to you because you and our guest here have a little affiliation.
Well, I don't know about affiliate. We do know some of the same people, but I feel like I know everybody everywhere. But anyway, I first met Dean Plumador in the autocross circuit in Pekin. I didn't really know who he was. You know, he's a friendly guy. Actually, it's really nice when you go to autocross and you run across people who are willing to help, willing to guide you, you know, hold your hand and say, hey, do this, do that. Dean's one of those guys. But then when I went over to Rantoul this last year, I really found Dean in his element because Dean is the president of the Champaign County Sports Car Club. And there, Dean, he knows everything about everything because Dean is pretty much, you know, has his hands in every bit of the show. So I was very pleased when Dean said he would accept doing the show, and thank you, Dean, for coming.
Oh, you're very welcome, Daryl.
Yeah,
Eric.
We're just hanging out in Dean's house. We've already seen his cool car. Yeah. We've checked out his awesome truck. We're having a brewski. Life's good.
I did not bring them in the front door. You know, they had to come through the garage door.
I know, the red carpet. That's what we do, right? The red carpet was pretty plush, no matter what door we were coming in.
Absolutely.
I'm happy.
Oh, that's awful nice of you. And thanks for saying such nice things about the clubs that we're
now,
part of.
I think that the one thing about autocross, and Daryl and I have talked about this before, because it's such grassroots, the organizations are, you're depending on all these new people to come through all the time. And if you're not making it welcome, you're not rolling out red carpet, you know, you're scaring people away. So I think, you know, you're doing a great job. We'll get way more into it later.
Absolutely.
But,
thanks.
But no, I appreciate that. And I think everybody who ever works with you on this type of stuff, I'm sure does.
Oh, fantastic. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll definitely talk more about what it takes to actually be a real driver because there is something about, it's such a humbling experience getting a car on a road course, and I want to talk about that because I was intimidated by it, did it 15 years ago or so, and I haven't been back since because it's in my head that I'm a terrible driver. But I'm going to push
you have been hung up on that.
I have.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're hung up on that.
I am.
I'm
from episode one.
You can't
one.
See his face, you know, across the podcast.
He's in pain right
wire,
now.
But he's second guessing himself.
We'll get there.
Self-deprecating, Mr. Scott.
Yeah. Get back on a course here soon.
So I was going to say the one thing that Dean, you're taking advantage of being the second, maybe really the third guest on the show, but Matt. Unfortunately, you know, got the brunt of not knowing how we staggered through the show. So we'll illuminate you and the guests, you know, as we're going through this. We're going to start the show like we normally do. We're going to go through our projects, we'll go through the news, and then we'll get to the interview with Dean where we got some questions. We have some hard-hitting, pressing questions for you.
They're written in red.
Dun, dun, dun. No, it's not that bad. There's no quiz either, so don't worry about that. You do need a number two pencil, though.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
All right, we start every show with the projects. We always like to talk about stuff we got going on. Daryl, what is going on in the Scott garage?
Not too much. Replaced a starter in the Tahoe. That's the Daily Driver 99 Tahoe Limited with the LS swap in it. It gave up the ghost after I took it through a Hux car wash. And the undercarriage wash?
Oh, you opted for the undercarriage wash?
I spent the extra $399 and was running through the undercarriage wash, and all of a sudden the lights go dim. And the starter makes this weird high-pitched shrieking sound like it was trying to engage, but not really. I don't know what the heck happened. I basically got through the wash, got home, took the starter out, and it basically was totally shot. I don't know if something shorted out inside in the Bendix or something or what, but that was the first one that I've ever actually had to replace that's the smaller high-torque starters, and didn't realize it also means it's more expensive. So Rock Auto. Rock Auto's where it's at. Good time.
So now wait a second. You didn't just go to Rock Auto because there were pictures of you standing in line at the local parts store.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. It basically involved me trying to get something tested and make sure that starter was actually bad, which it was. That was a whole ordeal. We'll talk about that later. The other thing, too, I had the 55 Plymouth out the other day, running some errands with it, and it didn't miss a beat. So I didn't start it. This is the first winter I didn't actually start the old cars. You know, some people have a theory you should leave them sit. You don't, you know, others go out every couple of weeks and start them up. I don't know. It didn't really matter to me. I got the thing out, ran just fine, but it does need a tune-up, need to go through the ignition system a little bit. So that's on my list. I have all the parts I need. I just need to have a weekend with some nice weather and be able to do that. So that's what I'm working on.
Do you leave the flags on it all year, or is that just something put on?
Just on the 4th of July.
I didn't know. Okay.
That's a Model A thing. Like, the Model A guys always have the, like, 10 American flags on it all the time, which is cool. It's cool, I guess.
I guess I have a picture of your car, the Plymouth, and it's got flags on it. I didn't realize it was July 4th weekend.
Yeah, it was probably after we do the West Peoria 4th of July parade every year. So
okay. All right. I thought you just drove around them all the time on that.
No, I'm not.
Look
one
at me.
Of those.
It's an American made car.
It's American. Not really. No, I'm not that guy.
Okay. Just checking.
What are you working on?
I got a couple problems, opportunities, like to
with
call
cars
them.
Or
yeah.
Just
in general?
With cars.
Cars, right.
Well, I got to register the Celica because I thought the Celica was going to maybe go on a no plate and just get trailered over to maybe the next autocross event. But my daughter, who is 17, is demanding she gets to drive that car for the spring. So, hey, you know what? I'm going to get some plates for it. Get it ready for autocross. I got to get the tires swapped over. We were planning on going over to the first event in April, but I was found out it was my dad's birthday that Sunday, so we may do the Saturday instead. I'm working on it. I'm trying really hard here. I'm going to need a stink eye from Dean across the table.
I mean, you can always drag him to the race.
Yeah. Well,
there's a stink eye for two reasons, but go ahead.
Because family's important, is that?
Yes. Like, you didn't know it was his birthday, really?
Well, I didn't know we were celebrating. The thing with families are, you know, it's like, we're going to celebrate two birthdays, you know, on this weekend, you know, in April. And so we're celebrating my brother's birthday from March. Anyway.
It's a combo.
I didn't realize what date that was landing on. It apparently landed on autocross date. So, and then we're going to shake up some cans of Placid Dip on the daughter's car, I believe, this year. Now that we know it runs, now we can paint it and make it look obnoxious. It was one thing to have it painted obnoxious and then not run and get stuck places. But now that we know it runs, we can feel confident and dress it up a little bit. So, and I'm going to lower it back down. Before autocross, we take the coilovers, drop it down a little bit. I got the 100 tread racing tires ready to go for it, and we take it over there too. So,
what year Celica is it? Is it 90?
90.
Okay.
What class are you running in?
Oh, it's far advanced for what that car is. But that's great because the PAX time's always good on it because the car is just a piece of, you know, a bucket of bolts.
Is it C or D or?
I don't know. See, this is the thing about the classes because sometimes you walk in there, and I'm very limited on my experience with autocross, but the guys will ask you some questions about the car and say, yeah. And they'll say, oh, you're in this class. I'm like, well, wait a second. I did it at home in the paper. I think I'm in this class, but I'm not the expert, so I'm trusting these guys.
The 100 treadwear tires instantly takes you out of street class and moves you into a P class of prepared of some sort.
Oh. I think I'm street prepared. I think that's what I am. Yeah.
Yeah, probably ESP or something like that.
With CSP. The cheesy cold air intake, the 100 tread tires, and the coilovers, I think I'm in street prepared.
The cold air, for some reason, the cold air kicks you out of street
stupid.
As well. Which
why,
is
why that is like the easiest mod anybody can do at home,
and it doesn't do anything.
No, it just sounds kind of. Cool.
I was gonna say it sounds like it's working really hard.
Sounds like a Hoover when you start it. Anyway, so we're gonna get the plastic up, get that thing fired up. Cool. I also have a massive squeak in one of the control arms on Tree Hugger. I have got to get that figured out. You cannot drive down the road and hit just the smallest bump.
It's bad.
Got this horrible squeak. Yeah.
Are they urethane? Is it urethane bushings?
Yeah, there's urethane bushings. And when you do those upper control arms on a lot of these Toyota trucks, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to put them on and then release them, let them loose, and then squeeze some grease in there and then tighten them back down. And I don't think that was done properly when we installed them. So that's got to happen. And then this is the biggest project I got going on right now. My son went to C2E2 last weekend.
Oh,
he got
cool.
a Pickle Rick sticker and he got a Dharma sticker. I don't even know.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know Pickle
Rick?
Oh, well, people,
Dean and I are looking at each other.
Like, all right. Any Rick and Morty funny. Fans out there know what this is. But my son has a 4Runner. He's 15 with a permit. He was so excited to see this sticker from Rick and Morty that he wants to put on his truck. So I'm going to show him as a 15-year-old how you properly prep the glass and clean it and everything instead of just slapping it on a dirty windshield, you know.
So it won't bubble off.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
Exactly. So we're going to do the proper thing, clean it all off. Toyota glass cleaner that comes out of the aerosol can is the best stuff in the world.
Really?
Yeah. You know.
It's what they call a teachable moment.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So,
Trainable, yeah,
it may not sound like much, but that is actually a project. Dean, you got something going on here. What's going on?
Well, so Daryl was talking about replacing starters and all of that stuff, and it reminded me of the lesson of horses and zebras that I learned last fall with the starter on my vet. Yeah, you know, you get to be the internet mechanic, and you're putting all these search terms in, and YouTube, and Google, and Corvette Forum, and yeah, they were all a major fail. They all pointed me to a couple of major fuses in the different fuse boxes, one under the hood and one under the footwell.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had a no-star condition, you were trying to track it down, or what?
Yeah, exactly, and it was really weird, you know, the dashboard, it's a push-button start, right?
Yeah.
So you hit the button, lights up, things check, all of a sudden, everything went dark.
Hmm.
I mean, there wasn't a light on in the car, and then it'd come back up and say,
weird.
No start for you.
Yeah.
So I'm putting, you know, I'm checking the battery, I'm doing all of these fuse checks, because for me, it was really easy work to do, right? You know, you run through all this, you do. I even built a little fuse checker in the in my lair over here.
Nice.
And yeah, no problem. And JVB Prime, Jim Van Bladel, out of the Chicago SCCA area, he posted something on one of my Facebook posts. He says, dude, think horses, not zebras. I went totally off the deep end trying to look at everything around the starter, never touching the starter.
Huh, interesting.
And it's like, okay, I don't have time for this week. I took it down to the dealership. They replaced the starter. Everything was fine. Didn't even touch it.
How many hours of brain cells did you lose on that?
We won't even go there. But, you know, the major lesson was simple first, then go for the complex.
Yeah, and it's a 2008 Corvette,
correct? It is, yes.
Right. Beautiful car, silver with some custom touches on it. We'll get a little more into that. But
it's got the Iron Man edition, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm.
I'm glad it runs, because cars are a lot more fun when they run, I found.
Way more fun.
That's why you have six, right, Daryl?
Well,
you can just choose the one that's running at a moment.
It was funny because people are like, so your Tahoe doesn't start while you're waiting for the starter. Do you have like five other cars you could drive? And I'm like, no, they're the antique vehicle plates. Technically, I'm not supposed to be running those.
Oh, that's right, till April?
Till like April or May, I think. I'll run them in April. I don't care. It's fine.
Quick Plastidip story if you want.
Oh, yeah. We always
I used to drive a G37. That was my first autocross car, two-door, right, G37. I did anthracite touch-up, you know, just kind of tweak a few things. It was a silver car. I did anthracite wheels on it, did the plastidip, did the roof in anthracite, did the rear diffuser in anthracite. Around the front fog lights, I did blackout.
Okay.
The grill I did in anthracite. Rear-view mirrors were in anthracite. Brought it into a dealership or somewhere one day, and they said, is this a special edition car? Is this a track edition or
something?
Nobody's
going to say about my daughters.
It's like, yeah, no, guys. This is just a couple cans of anthracite plastidip.
And, I had a lot of fun last weekend.
I was expecting to say something about it peeled off in a rainstorm or something like that.
It was pretty durable. Once it cures, it was bouncing cones off of it and everything.
Nice,
it was pretty
nice.
Cool. Yeah. Almost felt like it was bedliner there for a little while.
Mine might look like bedliner when we're done with it. I don't know.
I have seen a few trucks that somebody just rolled some bedliner on or sprayed bedliner.
Actually, I thought about doing that under half of the car just for fun.
There's a 280Z that's running around town that the young woman, she's the owner, she rolled on bedliner on the whole car.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. It's like, oh my goodness, that's
low maintenance, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It looked like Mad Max, but anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the time where we shift gears and we start talking about what's making headlines in the last couple of weeks.
That's awesome. You shift gears, you just throw that in, or you've been working on that?
That pun has been years in the making. We tested it with another audience. It did okay.
All right, so we're going to start with international news. It was reported on CNBC that Renault wants to merge with Nissan and will buy Fiat Chrysler. Now, this is a report. Renault is reportedly working on restart merger talks with Nissan over the next 12 months before making an attempt to buy Fiat Chrysler. A combination of Renault, Nissan, and Fiat Chrysler would be viewed as a viable rival to the current global auto leaders, Volkswagen Group and Toyota. Renault and Nissan and Mitsubishi are not officially merged, but all three car makers work in partnership under a complex agreement of cross-party share ownership, according to the report. Now, what's interesting about this, I'm going to glom this into this other report. One day later, from Nissan, from a Reuters story here, the CEO, Hiroto Sakawa, said on Thursday he was not even aware of discussions about the possibility the French partner Renault was considering a bid for Chrysler. When asked about reports of whether or not he heard about the talks cited in the media that on the previous day, Sakawa said, not at all. So does anybody
know what
is going on here?
Who's on first?
This whole car, you know, the parts, the pieces, the cross-engineering, the sharing of the... This is so incestuous anyway. Does it matter? Does it really matter?
Well, I think it does matter to a company like Mitsubishi, because I don't think Mitsubishi is a viable auto company worldwide without partnerships with Nissan and Renault and stuff like that.
But don't they still have, like, aircraft and bulldozers and cars
appliances,
and all of this stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But Honda has mowers. But, I mean, honestly, I think Mitsubishi was a car company at first. I mean, are they giving up the car business?
Or were they airplanes first?
I think they were in the aircraft.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Well, World War II airplanes
stuff? Nobody ever talks about the World War II airplane aspect
of it. Well, you got to make your money somewhere.
Yeah. But are there Mitsubishi airplanes running around right now?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've never heard of a Mitsubishi. I've never even heard of a Mitsubishi motor on an airplane.
I know that for the North American market, they're done. I mean, they do have...
There's a Mitsubishi store here in Bloomington that talks about Outlanders all the time.
Oh, but O'Brien has taken over... they've got six stores now here.
Well, they had to do that. They had to... Because you know, the best thing that ever happened for Mitsubishi... Well, for O'Brien was they bought those Mitsubishi franchises. And because of the factory here in town, they built them up, sold a lot of... Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, this market here probably sold more Mitsubishis than any other market in the United States.
Really?
I'll give you that.
Yeah. I'll bet
West Coast or something.
I'll bet the numbers are very dense for Central Illinois as far as Mitsubishi.
I drive by the old GE light bulb plant here on GE Road here in Bloomington on the east side, and the parking lot is now full of Outlanders.
Yeah.
So it's their overflow lot. There's got to be hundreds of them there.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the only car they make anymore, right?
It is.
Is that the Outlanders Ford or whatever?
But the best thing O'Brien's did was they took that Mitsubishi money and they bought other franchises around here, and they built that. They did Kia and they did Hyundai. At that
time,
those, you know,
and Nissan.
Yeah, but a Hyundai dealership was latched onto a Mitsubishi store back in the 80s and 90s because Hyundai was just an up-and-coming.
Right.
Same thing. Kia kind of came along, too. Well, now Hyundai and Kia are actually, you know, pretty strong brands. So Mitsubishi laid that egg for the O'Briens to kind of get them to where they're at, I believe.
Interesting. I understood that the Kia and Hyundai were kind of like GM and Chevy. There's kind of a side-by-side sort of partnership.
I think they, when they were selling the franchises, that's kind of how they came up. But okay. But they aren't completely in bed with each other that way.
Yeah. Okay.
Both South Korean, right? Both South Korean companies. And quality-wise, I mean, they were some of the first, besides Volkswagen, to come out with like the 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
No, not crazy.
Which, at the time, people were just like, that's insane.
But it was a powertrain warranty.
It was a powertrain warranty,
yeah,
correct.
I mean, honestly, I talk about this all the time where I work. You know, it's like, oh, well.
You get that thrown in your face? Yeah. Like, how come Toyota didn't have
first
this?
First off, I can guarantee you, this Toyota is never going to break down the engine or transmission. What's going to break down on you is going to be a power window motor at 90,000 miles. That's going to be $500, and you're going to be like, screw this, I want to trade the car or something, or the radio. Or the touch screen won't work on the radio. It won't be the motor and transmission on these cars.
Those are rock solid.
Exactly.
These days on everything, right?
Yeah. For the most part, most manufacturers. But but yeah, it's not that stuff that ever goes bad. So it's easy to say, oh yeah, 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
It's more of a sales gimmick.
Yeah, it is.
Well, and I know when they started doing that, it was when they introduced the Kia Sophia. You remember their first sedan? Mm-hmm. And it was like, I think out the door, those cars went for just over $10,000. When they came out late 90s. So you had to incentivize that because it's an unproven thing.
Oh, yeah.
Who was it? Hyundai with the Santa Fe's? They were giving away a Rio if you bought a Santa Fe.
That's right.
I remember that.
Remember
the two-for-one?
Yeah, you get a two-for-one. Dan O'Brien did that here in town, I think.
The buy one, get one?
But the one you got, the one you got was like a stick shift with a four speed with no AC. I mean, it was nothing.
But it was still a brand new car, right?
Yeah. I mean, it could have been a John Deere Gator. Probably been worth more money than that.
probably would. Yeah.
I don't know. Good winter beater.
Yeah, but still, a brand new car for free. Free. I use air quotes here, free.
Right.
Yeah,
everything. You got to read the fine print.
So, as you know with me, I always try and follow whatever's going on with Nissan, Renault, and all these. I'm fascinated by them. I don't know why, but there's so much turmoil. So we will keep you up to date with the newest and freshest information on these guys.
Fascinating stuff. As long as we're talking about Renault, I guess Renault makes an electric vehicle over in Europe called the Zoe or Zoe.
I've never heard of that.
Me neither. Mm-hmm. But apparently electric vehicle sales, including the one made by Renault and the Mitsubishi Outlander Electric, which I believe is a plug-in version over there, is also up 36% year over year. So electric vehicles are being embraced more in the European marketplace, which is kind of an interesting trend. The top seller still over in the EU is the Tesla Model 3, which I think was just released a couple of months ago in Europe. So kind of quickly adopted there. Interesting to see. Meanwhile, Amnesty International is ripping on electric vehicle manufacturers for producing batteries in a, quote, unethical and fossil fuel intensive method, which we've talked about on the show before. Eric, you've been pretty strong about talking about it's a clean vehicle.
You're moving your carbon is all you're doing with an electric car. Whether you're moving it to the power plant down the street, and let's not forget the production of that battery versus the production of a gas motor, and then the disposal of that battery after the fact, when you're done with it, versus the disposal of a gasoline engine. The oil sands in Canada look like paradise compared to what some of these strip mines look like in China, where they're trying to get lithium and everything else. So they have a point. And I think the economics of it will eventually level some of this out. I think as battery production becomes cheaper, they'll start throwing more regulations on these Chinese companies and these other companies and wherever they're at over in Asia to clean up their act. But it's a balancing act right now.
I read an article a couple weeks ago about Toyota, and they were saying, why don't you make a full electric car? Well, because we think we can affect reduced carbon greater by having a hybrid with higher gas mileage. With, they would produce with the same battery pack, they'd produce 20 cars that are hybrid with better gas mileage instead of one that has no emissions. It's all electric.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I'm seeing hybrid cars with 300,000 miles on them. I've yet to see an electric car that'll go past 100,000. I'm confident that I could sell to somebody and say, oh, yeah, you'll be great to 300,000 miles this car. I believe that the hybrid is the best of both worlds. And I think also Toyota thinks in a global sense that, what might be good for San Francisco is not good for Africa, so they have to figure out a way to make cars that fit all needs. Mm-hmm. But the hybrid technology is proven. It's working very well. And I've watched, I've seen it all. I mean, I could go off some serious tangents here. I do believe Toyota's in the right direction, some of the stuff, but it is very hard because electric cars are very popular. And the problem with this 36% stat from Europe last year, well, if they sold 10,000 cars last year that were electric, that means they sold 13,060. You know, it's not that the margin of electric cars versus gas cars are being sold right now is still 97% to 3%, you know. It's minutiae. So
2 or 3% electric, right?
Yeah. So I mean, this is like craft beer numbers are better than this when Budweiser was complaining. So.
True. The only interesting thing to follow will be a lot of these European countries have started to pass regulation.
Oh, California has too. It's not just foreign countries. Massachusetts, what? California.
When did that happen?
They signed up with the same stuff. Well, I think 2030, is that the line we were talking about?
Yeah.
So 2030 is when Sweden and all these other highfalutin European countries have said no more combustion engines. But California and Massachusetts have also stated similar claims.
Okay.
They don't want any more internal combustion engines sold in their states.
Started
those years. Yeah.
Draw that line in the sand a little bit.
Yeah. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I say technology is moving so fast that I think we'll get there. By the time 2030 rolls around, I think you'll be looking at electric cars as very viable options. But it's
always about the battery technology. Always about the battery technology. You know, I teach over at ISU, and students in technology, it's like, oh, I want to go, you know, build something new. I want to be the next, you know, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs.
Build a battery.
I said, think simple. If you can build a better battery that's even 50% better than what we got now, you're going to own the planet. You're going to own the planet.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what device you're powering. It's everything.
It's the battery. Just portable electricity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Shall we talk something that's maybe a little more dear to Dean's heart?
Yeah, I dug this article up, and actually I didn't have to dig too hard. All I did was just type in Corvette.
So first thing to come up.
I don't know a C6 from a C7 from a C8, but this article is all about the C8.
You're being humble.
Yeah, all about... anyway, so are vets snapping in half is the exciting headline that came from The Drive this week.
Yikes.
James Gilboy, this is his report here. Several alleged reveal dates for the 8th generation C8 Corvette have come and gone, but a new report claims it's been due to design problems delaying the new model's launch. These complications have apparently been so major, in fact, that they're causing damage to the car's frame, the glass engine cover, and it's all because of too much power from the chassis. Prototypes fitted with the twin-turbo V8 producing 900 to 1,000 horse on a factory car. This is amazing. A factory American car. American. That's extra amazing. Reportedly suffered from structural distortion so severe that the engine compartment glass hatch was breaking with a fine line. They were also saying that this... I lost my page. Where's my next page? Gosh darn it. Oh, there it is. Anyway,
here you go.
Anyway, they're saying with this 900 to 1,000 horsepower that the acceleration was so frightening they'd consulted their lawyers about selling something so fast. It's a great story because I first off, just knowing a vet and knowing that they're the mid-engine and the glass top, if you have so much torque in this thing and it's twisting this thing, it's breaking the back glass. First off, there's probably only one latch in the back.
Yeah.
Right? It just snaps down this and that nice spot. So how much flex are we talking about here? Are we talking about 6 inches of freaking flex?
You'd have to, right?
Yeah, you would think.
Because 1 or 2 inches ought to flex with the hinge,
right? It's got to be massive flex.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
There's not like 5 latches holding this glass down.
So on counterpoint here, I found an article in Automobile Magazine talking about the engineering that GM is having to learn to build a high-power rear mid-engine car. They've never done this before.
This is all new.
In fact, an American manufacturer has never done this before.
Yeah.
And all of their engineering, prototyping, and simulations and computer modeling are being done with basically the LT1.
Slide rules?
What? No.
We do it old school, the GM.
No.
We use instruments.
They got rid of those last year.
Yeah,
Come on.
All right, sorry. I hate to be insulting.
No, they're using the 450 horsepower 6.2 liter LT4, right?
Yeah.
Which is...
still a fun car.
Oh, my goodness. Motor. That car would be fantastic. Yeah. But it's a known quantity. It's everything that they've already done. Now they're putting the 4.5, the 5.5, single, twin, super, all kinds of forced air induction and getting up to 1,000 horsepower, doubling it with all of this torque. It's, oh, my goodness, what a whole bunch of new learning they got to do, right?
Yeah. That's amazing. Hey, To me, it's awesome to say an American car. You know, I love watching Grand Tour and Top Gear and all the shows. And they do every once in a while do an American car, but it's never the same. It's like
it's always like a big rear-wheel drive, like a Hellcat or some goofy thing that they just – it's a comic element.
But it would be amazing if the Vette were the car, you know, that came back. I mean, I think if, when you look at all of the American cars, you know, what you would say a muscle car is, I think the Corvette deservedly so should be that car that is an American car that would go against any world car.
So as a newly – as a budding Corvette – nation member myself.
I always thought you were a Corvette guy. I'm surprised.
No.
That's your first Vette?
He's my first Vette.
He's even got a phone cover. It's a Vette.
Oh, isn't that sweet? You know what it is? It's one of those little stickers that you can buy to put on the hub.
I thought you paid extra money for the...
Okay. Yeah, $4.
Okay. eBay's awesome.
I thought that was a $30 phone cover. No.
It's not Harley Davidson. It's just a Corvette.
But I don't think Corvettes are muscle cars. They're sports cars. There's a difference. There's a huge difference. You know, you got your pony cars, you got the Corvette, the Camaros, the Mustangs, the Chargers. Those are muscle car, pony cars. That is not a sports car. Sports cars can go left and right.
Yeah.
You know, muscle cars are big.
Straight ahead.
Straight ahead. Yep. You know, lots of big tires. You know, 2.2 seconds in a quarter mile, 0 to 60. You know, fantastic acceleration in one direction.
Yeah.
You know, even my little old C6 2008, my data metrics that I'm doing when I'm running on course, on just autocross, I'm pulling 1.2, 1.5 Gs in corner differentials.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not that big a deal for the car.
Yeah.
But it's a sports car. You know, try doing that with a base model Charger or a base model Camaro.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that.
Or a base model 5.0 Mustang. You know, you can't do that even with good tires on it.
Yeah, even a base level FRS with no tires is no fun, really.
No, it really isn't.
Yeah,
really isn't.
We'll see. It's interesting they're at least taking things in the Corvette platform to the next level. These are things, rumors in the 80s, there were all these, you know, the AeroVette concept and all these other things they've tried over the years to make it almost like an American Ferrari, which rightfully I think
it is. Well, but see now, this is you're contradicting that whole thought process, Dean, because you're saying maybe that you don't want it to be that world race car. I mean, you want it to
No, I'm not. I'm saying it needs to be a sports car.
Okay.
It can be a world race car. I'm good with that.
Are you good with that? Okay.
Watching the GT races with the GTLM class and the Corvettes in there, it's like, oh, man, that's fantastic. That's a lot of fun watching those cars zip around.
Sure.
This would be the next iteration of that. It can be the American Ferrari. Right. Yeah.
What is the sticker price in this car expected to be? Anybody know?
They're starting at 60 to 70 is what the current rumors are.
But
right?
for the full blown, the twin turbo,
probably going to be 180.
Oh, are you serious?
It's probably just going to be south of 200.
So now we're starting to get Ford GT. I mean, we're starting to get to this level where it's going to be a real.
You can get two of these for the GT, right?
Yeah, but we're getting high. We're getting out of the Joe six pack.
So
range,
chances are we're not going to be able to afford the top line C8, but
until
we can afford the
old
baseline. Probably 8.
Probably 10 after it's been through.
Dean's got a plan for retirement.
Yeah. Let's see, 32, I get my new twin turbo.
Yeah. Average depreciation over time.
Exactly.
You run the Excel on that. Yeah.
They're great cars, and hats off to GM for taking it to the next level, because I think they could also just take something – you know, take that awesome drivetrain, put it in like a warmed over chassis, and people would still buy it just because.
Well, so I don't want to degrade the ZR1, but that's kind of what they did with that, right?
Yeah, that's the supercharger.
The C7 one. ZR1, yeah. It's got the big 2.7 supercharger that really the Z06 should have had. Mm-hmm. It's got the 1.7, which is why it's overheating. So with the bigger supercharger, they could slow down the spin of it and get more boost, 110 horsepower to make that supercharger work.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Good thing it puts out 755.
Yeah.
but the C8, the new Vette, they've also, this is their pilot, this is their first car with all new electronics, all new computers, all new network on the car to make this work. This is this is all kinds of brand new engineering. Hmm. I am not going to buy a first year.
Yeah, let it sort
gonna,
itself out.
I'm going to wait for, a 2022 or something, right?
We'll see.
Good idea.
Hey, so Daryl, you actually got some local news, and somebody does die in this, so if anybody's sensitive, you know, Regan says it's going to drag the show down.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that for the next 3 minutes. Yeah. So minutes. Come back in 3 minutes.
Yeah, but no, it is very serious. I don't want to make light of it.
No, you're right.
But this was actually all over the news. Daryl, fill us in here.
Yeah. If anybody's been watching the news here in Illinois or probably throughout the rest of the country, they've probably been making headlines here. Two Illinois State Police officers were killed just in this last week after motorists had crashed into them during a traffic stop. One was in Freeport. The other one is up in the northern suburbs in Lake County, close to the...
says a tri-state.
Yeah, tri-state tollway. And that was at like 3 in the morning. Trooper Jared Ellis was a guy who was originally from Macomb. I guess he's kind of got roots out in western Illinois and worked out in McDonough County for a few years. He transferred to the northern suburbs. Well, he was killed by a driver that was actually going the wrong way on the tollway at like 3:30 in the morning. Not sure. That other person passed away in the crash, so I'm not quite sure where they're at with toxicology, if the driver was impaired or what the situation there was. This comes on the heels of Trooper Brooke Jones' story. She was the one killed up in Freeport. She was pulled over a semi-tractor trailer and was just doing a routine inspection, and another semi actually slammed into her. That person survived, and the driver of the semi, and I think they got charged with all kinds of stuff. But it's a good pause to remind everybody that these are also part of a larger problem. Since January here in Illinois, I think there have been 15 other accidents involving a state trooper that have been hit while just performing their daily job of traffic stops, inspection, things like that. So a reminder of Scott's Law, it just seems painfully obvious that whenever you see an officer, it doesn't matter if it's state trooper, county sheriff, or local, get over, give them a break, move off to another lane if you can, and just more importantly, slow down and pay attention. I know this always seems like such an obvious thing whenever something horrible like this happens, but we've all seen boneheaded people out on the roads just completely oblivious that there's either an officer behind them trying to honk their horns, sirens.
Yeah, I see
this daily. I'll see it with fire engines and people just do, there's coming up full blast and people are just kind of in their own little zone. Just pay attention, I guess. It's just a friendly reminder. I guess legislative-wise, they're talking about upping the fines, which in Illinois, it's a $10,000 fine if you are, I guess, max.
Yeah.
If they
catch you. What's the difference between a $10,000 fine and a $15,000 fine? I mean, $20,000 fine.
Doesn't matter.
I don't know if it's the fines. I mean, I drove to St. Louis yesterday, and I watched complete meatheads in front of me.
Yeah.
Not moving over because cops were over on the right-hand side, had cars pulled over. And I'm just like, and I didn't even know about the deaths at the time, I don't think. So I'm shocked by the way people behave out there on the roads. And it's always about, I don't give up my spot. I'm going to get this car in front of me. But
right.
For God's sakes, really? People are dying out here. I mean, have some respect.
And if anybody, it's not the same. I don't want to make it seem like it's the same thing. But if anybody's ever had a flat tire on the side of an interstate.
It's a horrible experience.
Terrifying. Yeah. Especially nowadays when people are going 85, 90. And that's just keeping up with the flow.
And they're looking at their phones. Even if it's against the law, half of them are looking at their phones. How many times do I drive to work every day just to North Peak and I hit the interstate and I look over somebody to the left of me? Because I'm always in the slow lane. My Forerunner, sure. I'm doing about 75 on a 70, and I'm in the slow lane. And I look over, and there'll be people on their phones, just looking at their phones, driving down the road. I'm like, I think this is illegal. I'm pretty sure this is illegal.
Yeah, yeah. So good awareness, just a good reminder. It's sad that we have to remind people this, but let the people do their job. So, okay, on a brighter note.
Yeah, let's bring it back up.
Let's bring this back up.
And we do honor the state police and all the police officers in Illinois. You do great work. Thank
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely,
absolutely. All right, so I drug this show over to Bloomington so that we could see Dean. And Daryl's like, who is Dean?
Well, hi, Daryl. Hi, Dean. You seem nice.
Oh, thanks.
We're in his house, yeah. Anyway.
Such a nice guest.
No, like I said at the beginning of the show, I met Dean a couple times, and when we were talking about getting guests for the show, I thought Dean would be a perfect guy. So this is going to be the part of the show where we talk to Dean and kind of talk about the Champaign County Sports Car Club and find out what's going on over there.
All right.
Again, welcome, Dean. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Eric. Daryl, it's awesome.
Thanks for
having fun so far.
Well, good. That's what it's all about.
Quick moment on your previous segment there. MythBusters did a bit on myth-busting texting or talking on the phone.
Yeah.
Which one was more distracting? They actually found that talking on the phone was more distracting, and they were both roughly equivalent to being fairly drunk.
I have heard that.
I can believe that. Either way, it's bad.
Yeah, I've heard if you text and drive, it's equivalent of, whatever, a blood alcohol content of X.
But even talking, they were giving the driver, you know, they were giving each other math problems like 5 plus 7. Yeah. And he's in the middle of an autocross course and couldn't answer that question.
I missed off ramps because I was talking on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yep.
I have too, just talking to my passenger. So.
No.
No, you didn't hear that. No. All right.
It's fine. It's fine.
All right. So we got a couple canned questions here, but so bear with us here if they sound a little campy. But first off, Dean, you know, you showed us your garage. You got a beautiful Ford F-150 out there. You got the vet.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been a car guy your whole life, or is this something that started recently?
So I kind of came back into I discovered autocross when I turned 50 because that was my first number was 50.
Like a year ago?
It was actually 6 years ago. This is my seventh season that I've been autocrossing.
So. Oh, seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
Wow.
Yeah, I have not been doing this that long.
Man, 6 years makes you look like a pro.
As we stare across the way at his trophies and recognition. Yeah, exactly. I just picked this
up. Yeah, and saw all the Cone Awards and everything. All right.
Anyway, my first car was a 68 Buick Skylark, and it was a two-door, 350, two-barrel, two-speed. Power Glide. This car was just. It was my grandma's. Believe it or not,
it does sound like kind of
a
grandma car.
I started my
but it was a two door. It was a two door. It was kind of sporty. Yeah. I was actually pretty.
What color
proud.
Was it?
The baby blue of
nice,
the 60s.
Nice.
Right.
Powder blue.
Powder blue, and the interior was the exact same color.
I'm going to be a nerd here and say Lily Tomlin in 9 to 5 drives one just like that. If you've ever seen that movie,
dude, hers was four door.
It was a four door though.
It was mine's okay. A two door. Right. Oh. You know, with the nice shark gills and everything.
Yeah.
So
dueling geeks. Ding 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 ding.
Gonna go home and watch that.
My folks at the time said, "Look, son, do you have more time or money?" And at the time, I had more time, so I had to fix it. I remember replacing spindles with bearings welded on them. I had to do all kinds of various things, right? One of the first upgrades I did to the car was, you know, had to jack it up, tighten up the suspension, because we lived on cow paths. I grew up outside of St. Louis in Missouri. We called them paved cow paths. It was awesome. Oh, that's was fantastic.
You learned to drift before drifting was cool, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Same
yeah.
for me.
Yeah. So my first upgrade was radials. On a good old nylon ply car tire, right?
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. The junkyard guys knew all about me down there. Yeah. So, but even before that, I had posters in my room, you know, the Countach and all of the cool cars at the time. Although I do remember having an Oldsmobile Starfire. It was the Monza version of the Starfire, the old hatchback.
The hatchback.
Yeah.
With the kind of the urethane nose on the front.
Yeah, it was a red car with these white stripes on it. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And it was attainable, right? Yeah. It was not like a Countach or a Ferrari or something.
Is this
right?
A quad four thing, Daryl?
No.
Just checking. Right?
No, this is old school. This is basically the same body chassis and stuff as the Vega. But the Monzas or the Starfires... what's the Pontiac one?
I don't remember what
Astra
it was.
Astra or something they made for a limited time. You guys would put the small blocks in those things, and they would tear it up.
Yeah.
Was it yours or V8? Or?
Oh, no. This was just a picture. This was just lust as a 13-year-old, right?
Child lust, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I had to put all that aside and just treat a car as a modes of transportation that I wasn't ashamed to be in. While I was working on my tech career and trying to learn
a lot
about
it. As a kid getting grandma's car, the first thing I do is just get to your job every day, right?
So. Yeah, totally. And I'm a professional Denny's cook. In case you need a burger flipped, I can do that for you.
Yeah.
5 years. 5 years at Denny's, yeah.
Nice.
So tell me about the C6 out in the garage. What's the story on this car?
So this was one of those by-the-numbers kind of buys, right? I had a Infiniti G37 that... I love the car. I love the look of it. I had 350 Zs before that. This was basically a 370 Z with a back seat in it.
Yeah.
Nice
car.
Fabulous car. I loved it. Quick footnote, I'm the reason that Bully Dog programmers decommissioned the 08 G37s.
Yeah.
They actually paid me to do some beta testing at the Redline Dyno here in town.
No kidding.
And their programs made the car worse.
Oh, wow.
Made the car work, so they decertified it.
Wow.
Interesting.
Well, congratulations for that amount of infamy there.
Yeah. There's no there's no lawyer that's going to call us later.
Yeah, I don't think so. I hope not. Anyway, love the car to death. I've always wanted one. Started autocrossing it. Guy at work challenged me. Oh, I'm going to kick your butt. Okay, let's go.
He's online looking at Corvettes the next night.
No. I actually ran the G37 for 3 years. It was in D Street, then it went to F Street, then it went to ESP, because after I broke it at Parkland one day, spun through a curb at 30 miles an hour, hopped the curb, landed perpendicular to my course of travel about 6 feet from the curb. $4,000 later of my own money, because, you know, your insurance is non-functional at these events.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Unless you tow it to the mall parking lot.
I don't know what happened.
No. I was.
You owned it, huh?
I owned it, and I fixed it. When I fixed it, I needed to replace some suspension parts, so I wanted to do some slightly upgrade, a little bit adjustable. Bumped me out of street class, and I didn't know it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't smart enough. I learned all kinds of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Put me into ESP, which is a prepared class. And the way I had the car, it was like just over the line for being in that. I was completely non-competitive.
I was going to say, what were you up against car-wise?
5.0 Mustangs with slicks as wide as your arm. You know, they just all-wheel drive, speed sixes, Mazda Speed 6s. It was like I wasn't even there.
Yeah.
You know?
We should step backwards, because you hopped right into the SEC. So you've only been doing this, you said, for 6-7 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Running with the SCCA. What brought you to your first event?
My buddy at work challenging me to kick my butt.
Really?
Yeah. I went to the June 23rd event out at Rantoul with Champaign County Sports Car Club. I worked the course in the morning, watching what they were doing, trying to figure it out, and we got rained out at lunch. So we were all hiding in one of the hangars, terrified. Look at all the lightning and thunder, and it was fabulous.
And that's the autocross events that you guys have at Rantoul. That's the old Chanute Air Force Base, right?
It is.
Okay, so it's just lots of open strips, airstrips.
No streetlights, no curbs, no boulevard.
Just
nothing.
Goes off into grass.
It's literally 12 acres of concrete.
Beautiful. That's like everybody's dream. Right?
It's mostly beautiful. We build courses that weave around all of the questionable concrete, and we're really safety conscious about that too.
Yeah,
we'll
get into that.
Sure.
But so the one time you go out there, he's gonna kick your butt, and were you hooked?
I didn't get to drive that day.
Well, okay, so
but I was committed to doing it, so they let me come back the next day, right? My buddy wasn't there. He couldn't come the second day, so I'm out there soloing, doing the bachelor things, like, oh, I'm clueless. I come up to the end of the grid.
I love that he remembers it. So anyway.
I tell this story all the time to new folks. I come up to the grid, and I hop out of my car, and I got my helmet on, and I said, guys, I don't know what I'm doing. I need help.
I think I might have done that in my first one, too.
Just throw your hands up.
Some guy ran over to me. He says, what? I said, dude, I've never done this before. I need help. Well, and then like four guys all huddled around. The fifth one comes, well, he's good. No, he's good. No, he'd be better. No, he'd be better. So somebody jumps in.
Yeah. And then they go with you?
Yep, get me through the
course.
Seriously,
you had a rider. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Tell me all the stupid things I did. It was fantastic.
I might need that the
so,
next time I go.
that the rest of that, I got out there a couple more times in 13. I got all kinds of help. Started to get a little better. The next year, I went to the club school, which is next weekend, by the way.
Yeah, I saw you guys are doing that. And I wondered about
April 6th and 7th.
I wondered about a club school. Is that literally for noobs or somebody who's a year or two into it? Is there a benefit to them?
So we do it two ways. There's an all-day beginner's course for, you know, 50, 60 bucks, something like that. The morning is classroom. Yes, it's worth it, because I thought I knew what I was doing. Even after the coaching, I realized I don't flipping know a thing about car dynamics and how to make a car go around.
That's the thing,
the
in and the out of the angles.
The physics.
The physics of going into a turn. I think there's so much you can learn, and some guys are naturals at it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys, practice makes perfect. But if you can get
perfect practice makes perfect, not practice makes perfect, because I've practiced plenty and reinforced lots of bad habits.
That's a very good point.
Sounds like golf.
Yeah. It is. And I'd almost argue it's cheaper.
No, I agree completely it is.
Seeing what that stuff costs.
Yeah. So I went to that first school, learned lots of things. I still got the book. I still remember all the cool graphics about weight management and corner apex and slip angle. Oh, fabulous stuff. Then I got out. They were coaching me some more. Break, 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 break. Gas, 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 gas. Left, right, 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 right. You know.
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
You got to figure out a language when you're coaching somebody that's quick and accurate when they're on course and they can actually listen and do something.
I know the same thing with spotting with 4x4s. You just got to have a certain language you stick to all the time on this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So then I went to the Evolution School, which is put on by Junior Johnson, Michael Junior Johnson. Okay. It's a traveling school with nationally ranked or nationally trophied autocross drivers. They teach you. I spent a day with them. I got 45 runs that day.
Wow.
What?
I almost wore out a set of 45 runs that day.
45
it
runs?
It was fantastic. Well, so in the club school, you're going to get 12 to 15.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Which is great because on an average track day, what do you get? Depending on how many people.
You know, I haven't been on a wide open track. I've heard from other guys.
9 to 12 sometimes, maybe if you're lucky. Yeah.
20 minutes you get.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's not much.
Okay.
That's a 2 mile track. You're spending a minute going around.
Yeah, it feels like a long. Actually, I don't even get sidetracked on all this. We could talk about the dynamics of different clubs and different races and all that. Mm-hmm. But I felt like that last one I went to with you guys over in Champaign, I felt like I got a ton of runs all day, and I was actually worn out by the time the day was over. So that's an accomplishment, right?
So the end of 2017, we had some come-to-Jesus moments with the board and the club members. It's like our numbers are going down a little bit. They're stabilizing. They're going down. It's kind of happening in the sport nationwide right now. What are we going to do to keep folks in? We're going to keep unique shirts for every event. So every event has a name and a unique design. Theoretically, that's never been done before. We're going to give those shirts away to as many people as we can, right? We're going to give little trophies away, little magnets.
Yep.
And the club before that had put a cap on 6 runs. They only wanted to do 6 runs because it was the OGs, I call them. It was the older guys that were running the club, and they wanted to be done by 2:30 or 3 o'clock and get home.
Okay.
Right? So we're trying to reinvigorate the club, and it's a whole day event.
Yeah.
Don't plan on leaving before 4 o'clock.
Yeah, 4 or 5 o'clock at
right?
least. Maybe 6 by the time the
So we're trophies. Really oh. tight. We're really tight on timing the first couple of runs of the first event. That's going to set the pace for the entire day, right? We're hoping to get 8 to 10 runs, right? So we want you to get lots and lots of runs. Wear out your tires that day, you know? Tell us that you're tired of driving and you just want to watch.
That's where I was at.
That's the kind of thing that we want to happen, right?
Daryl, you have to remember this because you've done it before. I mean, there is an adrenaline rush, and your body can only generate that adrenaline so many times during the day.
Yeah.
And by the end of the day, you're just like, all right, I'm numb to it. And it's cool. But, man, those first couple really wear you out.
But that's good. You don't want. Have you ever seen that study about F1 drivers? And you always think, oh, man, these guys got to be running on adrenaline. How can they possibly have enough? Their heart beats 59 or 60.
Really?
59. It's like they're sitting in their office chair. Because, frankly, it is their office chair,
insane,
right?
Isn't it?
It is their office.
Yeah. They're in like this zen-like state.
Is that the dishwasher again?
It's the dishwasher telling us that we're all done.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I am totally serious.
Ours says the same thing. It's Schubert's Trout. Is it a Samsung?
It is a Samsung.
Yeah. Yes. All the Samsung appliances have little chimes and songs.
I think my oil change guys do that at the dealerships.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the club, because the Champagne club that you're involved with, are they an offshoot of the SCCA, or is it?
This is a great question, because, there's two different ways to do this. You can do SCCA, and you can do your independent, and you guys are truly independent, right?
We are truly independent. We are one of the last independent in the Midwest.
Seriously.
Tri-State, which is out of Chicago, they compete with the Chicago SCCA for time and attention. David Fincham is the president of that club, and I'm always talking with him about. He and I are sharing all kinds of secret sauce with each other and trying. We're actually doing a joint event July 13th and 14th. He's going to bring his folks down, and we're going to have
oh, cool.
a joint event. event that weekend. So
that would be fun.
One day will be SCCA or Champaign County. The other one will be Tri-State. But the independent clubs are starting to wane, right?
Yeah.
SCCA is the easy way to bring this club up and make it work. One of the neat things about SCCA is the if you're not a member of SCCA, then you have to pay a weekend membership, which is $15.
Okay.
Now, that's great because that covers your insurance for the event, right? Oh, sorry. I just tripped over something.
Sorry. It happens.
That's the big reason that we're still independent. Champaign County used to be part. So there were three clubs in Central Illinois. There was the CIR SCCA. Mm-hmm. There was the Heart of Illinois Car Club, and there was Champaign County Car Club. They were all together. They all bought equipment to put on events, and they were always joint events. Well, there was a point in time when the leadership of each of those groups kind of got angry with each other, and there was a divorce, right?
Somebody's ego got bruised somewhere.
You know, wasn't there, and it's all second and third hand from what I've heard. So we'll just say there was a divorce. And
fair enough.
The Heart of Illinois evaporated because we've still got a couple of pieces of equipment in our truck that have stickers that say Heart of Illinois on it, right?
Just club folded a couple years back then?
Yeah. So Champaign bought them out, paid for their equipment. We took it. And CIR took their stuff. And then we had to buy to replace whatever they had.
Gotcha.
CIR pretty much died for a few years, and then Ray Wise and Jason Daly and Joe Feaster, they all came on strong and resurrected that club about 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
They're mainly over in Mossville. They're running at the Cat Plant.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had Pekin there for a while, but the Pekin Airport, and I've talked to the manager over there, it's not going to happen.
I wouldn't call that unfortunate. I was the safety steward at a couple of those events, and frankly, they didn't want us there to begin with.
Well, I agree with that. Were you there the day the Mustang ran into the hangar?
I wasn't there that day.
Yeah, I was there that day.
I wasn't there that day. I was there.
Lost it?
I know who the guy is, and it was his. He was only about 6 or 8 events into autocrossing. Mustang 5.0, it's very happy butt end.
Sure.
The Pekin courses are very small. They're basically double overlap.
Very tight because it's only in the area off the hangars where the planes basically roll out.
It's the ramp.
A huge space. So
no.
The biggest problem with that incident was that the guy ran the Mustang into a hangar, and when he hit the wall of the hangar, he shot a mini fridge across the hangar, and it nearly hit a plane by, inches. It had it hit the plane. We're talking FAA reports. We're talking all kinds of incident reports there. I mean, it would have been more trouble than it was worth. So
the next event that we had out there, I was the safety steward. And you've seen me at events. I'm very visible. Yeah. I'm always there.
A bright, visibly green shirt right now.
We want to make sure we didn't miss them when we rolled up here today.
We're PG-13, right?
Yeah.
I'm the butthead in orange. Right?
What were you going to be? I don't know what...
It starts with A.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because...
Oh, Daryl's dripping. Sorry.
Oh, man.
Sorry. Your wife's got kill stain. Sorry.
That's okay. It's easy to clean up. I was talking with one of the guys who didn't want us to come back. And I didn't know who he was until he and I introduced each other, and I told him who he was.
Was he the manager of the...
No. The manager was all good. This was another guy. He was one of the... I don't know. He seemed to be one of the primaries at the airport. And I looked at him and I said, how do you think we're doing? How do you feel about this, the safety, the way that we're carrying on the event and how we're... He says, this is amazing. This is nothing. Nothing like what I thought it would be.
Oh, really?
Yes.
He thought it was just a bunch of teenagers out here just doing donuts out there or what?
Yeah, that's what you see on TV, Fast and Furious and crap, right?
Yeah, no.
He was actually very impressed when I was talking to him about this. So, and I can't disagree with Pekin not wanting us back because that is a small airport. They're all about their fees to take off, to land, to store. We were disrupting them for 2 days. we were disrupting
them. Yeah, but it was also an income source for them, too, because as a small airport, if they can find $2,000 or $3,000, you know.
It wasn't that much.
Oh, wasn't it? I mean, okay,
we were probably in the $500 range.
Oh, so that's not worth their time then.
No, not anymore. And frankly, they were shutting down the events. We were having to move the course to get an airplane out in the middle of a heat.
Yep.
And then we'd have to reset, and we'd have to put the corner workers back out. It was not a very – the rhythm of the event
got
broken.
Yeah, it didn't feel right.
So Rantoul is completely different. We're on a closed ramp right outside of an old hangar. It's 12 acres of flat concrete that is some of the best grip in central Illinois.
Really?
If you're headed for Lincoln, Nebraska for nationals, you got to come and race with us because it's similar. It's similar. That Pekin was asphalt.
Yeah.
And it was way slicker. As well as Mossville, it's a combination of surfaces. Now I'll tell you about beating my kidneys up later at Mossville.
That's another story.
Yeah, it's another story.
The concrete is preferable? I mean, as far as grip and everything?
If you're headed to nationals, you want to be able to drive on similar surfaces. And the Lincoln, Nebraska airport is all concrete, right? It's good fuzzy concrete, you know? So, yeah, you got to simulate the kind of environment so you know what's going on.
Makes sense.
All right, you hit a bunch of the questions I had for you, but one of the questions I had was, it's one thing to want to race and to run with other guys, but what draws you to want to volunteer to help out? I mean, now you're the president. You were vice president last year, so what drew you in there?
Well, I started as an assistant safety steward. I just thought it would be fun to get involved. I've never been involved in a volunteer organization as an adult like this before. And again, you know, you get over 50 and it's like, it's time to give back, right? I want to have some fun, but I want to give back. So this was starting to be a passion. I love the cars. I love talking about this. I love teaching it. I love learning it. How can I help? So they tagged me I got the Jeff Stevenson Award the year before I was on the board, which is the board at the Champaign County Club, the recognition for an up-and-coming driver.
Okay.
Right? So by getting this, they recognize that maybe there's something there. And I really, that was just very cool for me to be recognized like that. I thought that was fantastic. But it was time to give back. So I became the assistant safety steward. Through no fault of his own, the safety steward on the board had job and life difficulties paying attention to the club. So I took over. After 4 months of being the assistant, I took over as the safety steward. And then I ran it the next year, added 20 safety stewards to the roster.
Oh, wow.
We trained and have on-site or available 20 people who were safety steward trained.
Wow.
And I'm also a safety steward for SCCA. I've gone through that training. Thanks to the folks over in Peoria, CIR, I got my certification. And I've been helping them. I've been giving back to them as well. But our program over at Champaign seems to be a little bit more deeper than the SCCA. SCCA is about an hour and a half webinar of a lot of things that a racer would already know, and then 2 days on course as an assistant. You know, you're shadowing someone else.
So when you're talking about, being on the course and doing safety-related things, I mean, is it just marshaling corners? What are some of the things that are involved in putting a safe event on and making that a priority?
As a safety steward, the number one thing you need to do is ignore the cars and watch the behavior of the people.
Which is hard to do, probably.
Oh, my goodness. You get
You're talking about the bystanders, not the drivers.
Well, I'm talking about the corner workers. So remember, this is a volunteer sport. When you're not driving, you're out on course tipping up cones for the folks who run them over, right? Mm-hmm. You have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually 3 or 4 corners out there. There's a corner captain, 3 or 4 workers on each corner. All kinds of kerfuffle going on with humans out on course with a piloted land missile out there, right?
Yep.
So as a safety steward, you're watching the people, you're watching their behaviors, you're making sure they're paying attention to the cars coming at them. And if they don't, then you just go have a quick and little chat with them. It's like, pay attention, behave, or we're going to find somebody else to do this.
Yeah. Now, it's funny you say that, because last year when I was at Rantoul, the guy that I was on the corner with, he didn't speak English. He was a U of I student, and I don't know what he was driving. I think he was driving a BMW. But he didn't understand a word that was going on. He just kind of stood there.
That's the Chinese contingent from U of I. Yeah. Yeah. We had $1 million autocross last Sunday at Champaign. Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. He and six of his other friends showed up, and we had over $1 million worth of cars on course.
I believe it. I've seen
this was fantastic.
I've seen some really high end cars come out of Champaign and come to find out they're graduate students or
something. Yeah. It's all foreign money.
Yeah, it's the middle class Chinese student coming to America and being an American for the time that they're here, right?
Yeah.
They want to enjoy the car culture, suck everything they can out of it, and autocross and a little bit of racing is
part of
that.
And they're not buying a super high-end car for the most part in some of these. They're just buying some middle-grade BMWs and stuff like that. I mean, I guess to the average 20-year-old, yes, they're excessive cars.
Yeah, you know what I drove when I was 20?
Yeah, but to the somebody who wants like a awesome, amazing car, they're not like superhuman cars there.
We had a 2019 C7 Grand Sport out there. We had a Z06 out there. We had the
Yours?
M8. No, mine's a base.
The M8.
A BMW M8, which... Oh my God!
Student's car.
Yes, I wanted that car to do so well. It's such a sexy looking car.
Is it too
but
heavy?
It is such a pig.
Yeah,
it's like the old Infiniti. Right?
And that was kind of the funny thing was we took the FRS out there and beat the hell out of it, and we were beating some of these kids with these cars that were three times as expensive. But you know, it's about fun. I didn't really care so much about that.
Sure.
Well, Eric, it's about the driver too. These guys have done this maybe once, maybe twice.
Good for them though, getting out.
They literally don't know how to drive their cars.
Yeah,
they're good enough to drive them on the street.
I believe that, because when would they have had experience like that before this?
You know, in the cities in China, you can barely walk fast, much less drive fast. Yeah. Right, so. So, no, I love seeing them come out, and for the most part, they're starting to become understanding of the volunteerism in the course and what they need to do to step up and be part of the club, at least for the day, right?
Yeah, get involved, and that's the nice thing. They're not just paying money and running it on a track. You know, they're actually being involved in some of the
events. 2 years ago, there was a lot of them coming out that you could tell they were very upper crust. And they expected to pay and play and lead. Some of them even brought these beautiful women with them in high heels and short skirts.
I saw a little bit of that.
Yeah.
As eye candy.
That was a thing.
And I don't want to be like that, but that's totally the way it looked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Instagram opportunities.
The guys are really starting to understand what it's like to be part of the club, the reason why they need to be out and work.
So these guys
are
becoming members?
Yes, they are. The reason is, good or bad, to be a membership at Champaign County is $20 a year. That buys you a $10 discount every day you register.
That's worth it.
So if I hand you $20 right now, am I a member?
Yes, almost. We'll have to wait for my wife to come home because she's a treasurer. She can process all the paperwork.
She's involved too. That's great.
Yeah. It was one of those things that our son is in college. We don't have a whole lot of parental duties anymore. And we wanted to do something together. She says, I'll run numbers for you guys. That's fine.
That's awesome.
She doesn't drive though.
You were talking a little bit about the health and well-being of the organization, organizations in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I know being an antique auto club, I think I said before we started rolling, I'm 40 almost, and I'm the youngest one in the group, and it's we're not getting a lot of new members. So organizations like this, what's the appeal besides, you know, like you said, there's, you know, you get discounts in the events, you get a T-shirt, you get a little kind of fun swag as kind of a thank you gift.
Brag swag.
But what is it really, I mean, if you had to express why someone should join a club such as yours, what would it be?
You know, that's a really tough question. I always go back to the reason I got my son involved in this. 2 weeks after he had his permit, I showed him how to shift into second gear, and he was out racing with me. Yeah. You know, I call them piloted land missiles for a reason, because that's exactly what they are. Look at how many deaths we have every year with drivers that don't know what to do in emergency situations. And you say, oh, you guys are just going out and dodging a bunch of cones. But think about how many times you're going to overcook something and you're going to spin your car on course. You're going to overbrake something. You're going to slide through. You're training yourself how to drive better on the street. So is this a reason to get involved? Maybe not get involved as a volunteer to the club, but come out and participate. We need drivers. We need folks to pay to put the events on. You know, nobody's getting paid to do this. We got to cover insurance. We got to cover the site rental, the porta potties. You know, all the stuff that you see around has to be paid for. Everything else is coming out of volunteers' hides. And that's okay. When we go out, we have a good time. We get to have a little fun. I get to have fun driving, and I get to watch other folks. Maybe I get to coach Eric a little bit, you know.
He needs it.
So why would you want to do this? I think because it would make you a better driver. It prepares you for those emergency situations that we're all a part of. And maybe you can give a little back to somebody else who needs the same thing.
Isn't it funny how I with wheeling, I get the same thing all the time. I'll go to Badlands and be like, man, I've been every section of the Badlands, but I get such a thrill when I take somebody who's never been there before and I get to like show them different spots or get to maybe help them figure out something. Mm-hmm. And the joy that I get from that is better than the first time I ever went wheeling. Do you get that too?
Oh my goodness. I love teaching folks. I love watching folks get better. Young man last year, he's a U of I student, very, very respectful. He's taken my coaching to heart. He and I traded cars at the end of last year. And
trustworthy. That is trustworthy.
We call them grudge matches, right? We call them grudge matches.
I've heard you guys do that, and I'm like, I don't know if I could allow that.
What, switching cars?
Yeah. So if I grudged Eric, I would run three runs in my car, then I'd run three runs in his, right? But it's all by permission. It's all by permission, right? It's not like I'm just going to hop in his car with my helmet and go take off, right? It's all with permission. But this young man had been, I've been coaching him since he started in the autocross school. I had a lot of confidence in him, and his first run, he did not do well with my car. He did not know what to do with a high-powered rear-wheel drive car.
I can't imagine I would know what to do if I hopped in your car versus driving that Celica and then hopping in a vet. Give me a break.
So he started, his go-to car is a WRX, right? Turbo, all-wheel drive. Yeah. He put great RE71 tires on it. Oh, he set it up well for doing this. Drives completely different than the Corvette.
Heck yeah.
Completely different. Oh, yeah. So he didn't do so well, but we coached him through it, and he went out and did okay. He did okay. But what a great opportunity to trade cars and watch how people that you've been involved with for the last couple of years are progressing in their skill and their thought process. See, I'm also a teacher at ISU, and that's one of the highs that I get is watching that aha moment when somebody gets it.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting in a room and you're not even looking at that student, and all of a sudden you can just see the brightness coming out of their brain.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
You hit them. Yeah, you got a moment.
Oh, and I get the same moment. It's fantastic.
One of the things that always intimidated me when I was younger, I used to autocross at a couple events when I was in my 20s with the Madison Sports Car Club, which is kind of a similar group too. I don't believe they were in like an SCCA chapter. Mm-hmm. The intimidation of, wow, there's all this nice stuff here and everybody's got all this money and time invested in these vehicles and I'm rolling up in what I got. And it started to get in my head. Well, it didn't matter because there were also guys in like Ford Tauruses, you know, the SHOs. But, you know, I had a friend pull up in a 16-valve Mercury Tracer, and he wound up having a blast and did pretty well. So, in my 20s, that was still like, oh, how am I going to compete with an Audi S4? Like, there's no way. Well, no, just get out on the track and be the best driver that you can be in whatever you bring.
Eric brought up the golf analogy, and it's very similar to autocross. You're competing against people in your class. There's 22 classes of automobiles that we can fit you into. Mm-hmm. 22. So you're not going to be competing against folks that are just so far prepped or out of your league that you can't at least show respectable, right? But there's always things to learn. You know, I put guys who've been doing this for 10 or 12 years in my car. They're going to beat me by a second. And Eric, you seem to think that I'm pretty good at this, but
I do. I bow every time I'm near you.
I mean, these guys, I am humbled just to look at them. I mean, it's fantastic to watch them do their thing. And the last time I co-drove with one of these, Chuck Matthews, nationally ranked Miata driver. He says, you know, I haven't driven in a Corvette in probably 15 years, and that's when I was, you know, just hot rodding on the street. Yeah, I'll co-drive with you. Oh, man, I learned so much that day.
Seriously, from the Miata guy.
Oh, man. Well, Miata guys who drive Corvettes say it's just a bigger Miata with lots of horsepower.
Lots.
Because the performance capabilities are very similar other than horsepower and, you know, a little bit of width.
Here's me being dumb. Are Miatas rear-wheel drive?
Yeah. They are. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The good old-fashioned rear-wheel drive.
That's why they'll never die in the autocross circuit. They are still, you know, one of the last cheap cars you can roll around out there.
Oh, yeah, and 15, 16-inch wheels. Oh, everything's cheap. Yeah.
They do pretty well.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, 14s.
Yeah. Or 14s, yeah.
Like the first gens.
Yeah, yeah.
So as far as, I mean, and you've done everything. How many events you got going on this year with Champaign County?
So we're down.
Down.
So we start in March, and we've got a school. So March through November, what's that, 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 18 days. And we put on a school, so that's 2 more days. The school is on Saturday, and then we do a free test and tune day if you're a student on the day after. We don't change the course, which is very typical. Usually Saturday and Sunday events, as an autocrosser, every day you show up is a different course. And I tell people that, oh, yeah, you race? What's the course like? What do you do on corner three? It's like, dude, corner three is in a different place every day I go out. Yeah. You got to learn to read the course and figure out what to do. The school weekend, it's the same course both days because we want you to come back out and test your skill and imprint some of the good things that you've learned, right? But, yeah, we're running 20 days of events this year.
So do you get a chance to ever go anywhere else?
Not much. I'm hoping. So I'm going to retire June 1st.
Yeah.
May 31st is the last day I'm at ISU. June 1st is my first day of retirement. I'm hoping the end of the summer. I want to try to get out to down to Gateway down in St. Louis.
Sure.
I want to try to get up to Tri-State or Chicago. I'm definitely going to get over to Mossville for the
always do that. 13th? I mean, you do a great job of getting over to the Peoria side. But so I see these events at Autobahn and Gateway and stuff like that. So I was wondering if you actually get time to get away to those.
I really wish I could. But we're actually talking about that in the board, that we put on so many events that we don't give our drivers time to go somewhere else and learn what they do and get better.
And go up to Gingerman or Blackhawk or something like that.
Well, those are mostly open road courses.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I want to do both of those, too.
With your car, I think. Oh, yeah.
I would love to do that. I mean,
you could do a club day. You could take your group and just do it up at,
Yeah, but we've got our event schedule set.
Yeah, you're done for 2019, aren't you?
Yeah, we're pretty much set for 2019, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, 22 days, and I'll be there for almost all of them, plus some over at CIR. So
nice.
Yeah. So is there a dream? Is there something like, man, I've been thinking about doing this for a long time? It's kind of like, you know, when a golfer talks about going to St. Andrews, something like that. Is there anything you got in your bucket list of racing or driving you want to do?
Couple things. I'm part of the solar car team at ISU. Last year we were out at Hastings, Nebraska. It was a fun little 2.1 mile race course that was on the edge of town. I would have loved to have taken my car out and just dyno juiced it around and see what was going on. All the solar cars had it out, but it really got me thinking that it might be fun to get out to Gingerman, to get out to Black Hawk Farms, get out to Route 66 and those places, Joliet. This summer I'm going down to Austin to the Circuit of the Americas with the solar car team. And if I can, I'm going to see if I can rent a Corvette and get out on the course before the solar car team
sneak a couple runs.
It's like, guys, can I just have 3 laps? Yeah, just find me a car. I don't care. Perfect. The other thing that I've been trying to get my dad to do with me is the Corvette experience down at the Corvette Museum.
Oh, yeah.
$600, you get a half a day in their car on the track with a coach, three 20-minute sessions. Now, $600 seems like a lot of money, but
20 minutes seems like an eternity out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guys who have made it from Autocross out to Gingerman or out to Black Hawk Farms, I say, guys, what's this like? Because I don't know. They said it's faster and slower than Autocross. I said, explain more. Use more words.
Yes.
So faster speeds, right? You're not going 50 or 60. You're going 120 to 150. But all of your motions and movements are slower.
Sure.
You have way more time to think about things and make mistakes. It comes faster, but you have plenty of time to plan it out and figure it out.
It's got to be a completely different thing for sure.
Well, that's what autocross is. It was intended to be parking lot attainable sport for anybody, mini road courses. That's what it is. We're looking at 3/4 to a 1 mile road course, all on a parking lot.
Just condensed it.
Yeah.
And a lot of, I didn't realize until I read an article years back about the early days of kind of like club racing and stuff here in the States. A lot of it was like servicemen, World War II, and General Kurt LeMay and
stuff. Did not know that.
Yeah, it was these guys that went over and they fell in love with like Jaguars and all the cool stuff, I mean, Alphas and stuff we didn't have over here. And they came back and they started buying these things and like, well, what do we do with them? Driving them to work is no fun. Like, so it was a way to take, you know, a vehicle that it was a little more, I don't know, special than your average Studebaker or whatever at the time, and then be able to kind of put it through its paces and use it on a nice road course, because we don't have like over in the UK where you can take a nice little winding, you know, course through
there's
some
no winding roads in central Illinois.
Countryside. No,
it's a 4x4.
I don't know.
1x1 mile.
There's a few.
150 is kind of fun in certain places.
Yeah, that's against the law, Dean. Okay.
Okay. So you talk about the servicemen doing that sort of thing. Champaign County was formed as a club in May of 1957.
Oh, wow. So it's been around.
62 years.
That's crazy.
62 years this club has been in existence. And I'll tell you what, I am feeling awesome to be the steward of this club for this year. It's just tremendous to think about all the people who came before me and had the club and raced in the club and the stories. Some of the guys are still around.
You still have some founding members that are around?
We do.
Seriously? Cool.
There's a couple of guys who've been around, maybe not 57, but 58 and 60.
Pertinere?
Yeah.
Cool.
They knew the guys that signed the original document.
There's got to be some, you know, families that have grown up in that club too, right, I imagine?
Yeah, there is. We've got another one. Russ Bedford was one of the coaches I've had forever. He runs in the same class that I do. He's got a C5 Z06 Corvette. He and I co-pilot each other's cars. And, you know, my benchmark 2 years ago was, got to be within a second of Russ, second of Russ.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Last year, I actually beat him a couple times. So I'm feeling like, you know, I haven't made it, but I've got a name for myself in the club. I'm feeling good. He comes and drives my car. I drive his. He's got kids that have done this, and he's got grandkids that come out and do this.
Nice.
So
it's awesome.
Yes, the Bedford clan is to bedrock as far as we're concerned.
Dean, that's like all the questions we have for you. So is there anything else we didn't touch on that you want to maybe share about Champaign Sports Car Club?
Actually, we scanned over one thing that folks may not know about any sort of racing, and that's the insurance.
Hmm.
Your State Farm insurance, your Allstate insurance, there's clauses in there that actually turn off the insurance as soon as a competitive event starts.
Yeah, my agent informed me of that. He said, I don't want to hear anything about your SCCA.
Well, and that's why when I broke my Infiniti, I didn't say anything. I just took care of it myself. Now, the body shop that I went to is here in town. It's called Auto Body Alternative. They're one of our sponsors this year. Those guys are fantastic for little tweaks, dents, and stuff. Okay. You know, I talked to him about painting the car, and he says, oh, no, that's too much. You know, we don't do that. We specialize in small dents and dings and such. So, yeah, it was $4,000 for me to get back on course, but I still have my insurance and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So folks got to understand that you're pretty much out of pocket with when your car breaks, if you dent another car, if you take out a fence or a building.
It's on you.
You got to expect that it's on you.
But that's the nice thing about Rantoul is, I mean, other than grass and maybe hopping the curb off the grass. I mean,
you don't have curbs?
Yeah, well, if you were to come back onto the concrete from the grass, I'm saying there's not a whole lot there to work with as far as damaging your car. So
there was a fence in the last 2 years.
It's a long ways from the track.
Eric, we've had Corvettes go off 2 years in a row through the fence.
Are you serious?
Through the fence.
Okay, never mind. Sorry. Yeah, so, scratch that.
So, yeah, Corvette drivers are now getting Mustang.
Yeah, they're Mustang reps. Behavior.
Yes.
Right. Imitating them.
Yes. Dean, if they want to get a hold of you, what do they got to do?
So there's a couple ways. For me, it's depluma@gmail.com. That's depluma@gmail.com. I'm also president at ccsportscarclub.org for the moment. The website is ccsportscarclub.org. Facebook, just do a search for us,
yeah.
Champaign County Sports Car Club. Instagram, search for us, Champaign County Sports Car Club.
I'm not following you. I feel bad. I got to follow that.
Yeah, I'm going to do that right now.
YouTube.com/U#C/. Just search for
Champaign County Sports Car Club. We'll put a link on the page.
Let me put in a plug, too. As far as YouTube goes, we're looking for car videos. We've got like four out there, and two of them are mine.
Oh, my God. I got a bunch from the last time I went.
Totally. Okay. We'll help cross-post. We'll do whatever you want with that, but Sweet. We're looking for content.
Awesome.
Well, Dean, thanks for taking time and letting us into your home and see your awesome, awesome Corvette and being part of the show.
Yeah, you're very welcome. This has been fun.
Yeah, and thank Miss Blumador for evacuating the house for us to come by.
Oh, she didn't do it on purpose. She just had stuff to do.
Yeah, that's what my wife. That's what my wife always says too.
Good time to run errands. You're going to talk about cars for 2 hours? I'm out
with some guys on microphones in the living room. Yeah, I'm out.
Oh, thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
All right, so Dean, please stick around. We do have some other segments to talk about here, and we'd love to have your input as always. I think it's time for is it time for the moment of Musk, Eric?
I think it is.
All right,
it is your moment of Musk. That's Butch, man. I tell you what,
no expense spared.
Yeah. So this is from Hyperbeast. It's not an everyday occurrence that the most prominent technology entrepreneur in the 21st century comes onto SoundCloud to become a rapper. That's what Elon Musk did on Twitter on Saturday, March 31st, to announce his foray into the arts and the culture sphere of rapping. This is Rest in Peace, Harambe. I can't make this stuff up, folks. So Harambe, if you don't know, is the gorilla that was killed when he accosted a small child that fell into the zoo in Cincinnati. And he was shot, unmercifully, but that's what happens. They're saying that this right here, Musk clearly has personality, resonates amongst internet-age kids, and even has the ability to laugh at himself. So in the age of pitch correction, anybody can be a rapper, that's for sure. Is this Elon rapping? We don't know.
It might be. It might be. Autotune just wonders for everybody, apparently.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know what this is.
Anyway.
I can hear the tune.
That is your moment of Musk. I can't turn it off.
You should put some with the echo behind it. Well, I didn't know he was a YouTube sensation, but now he is, I guess.
I cannot make this stuff up. And honestly, like I said, in the age of pitch correction, Elon obviously has it figured out. Am I on right now? You got me?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Can you hear yourself?
Yeah. No, for a second there, I lost myself. Sorry. All right. So, yeah, in this...
I know right where you are.
All right. Thank you.
You are here, says the red dot.
So we'll look for that one on Casey Kasem's Top 50 here coming up. I'm Casey Kasem. Coming at you this week is a long-distance dedication from a man from South Africa.
Canadian or dead.
Okay, so
let's
talk about things that tick us off this week, Eric. You want to talk about that?
Did I talk about this before? I put it in the notes, but did you read what I put in here?
You shared some pictures. I don't think we talked about it on the show.
Oh, thank God. Okay, because I feel like this is a recurring theme with me. I take pictures. Every once in a while I'm at work, I'll send a picture to Daryl and say, hey, look at this disgusting vehicle.
Look at this gross thing I just had somebody vacuum.
Yeah, and so I don't want to name names or I don't want to say anything, but in my job every day, I check in cars and I see people and we do service work to cars. And I have seen some stuff here recently. We have some cars come back for recalls, and when you do a recall on a car, people come back that you've never seen in your entire life. You'll have a car that comes in that's never been to a dealership in its entire life, but it's only coming in for the free service. Hey, God bless you. That's great. We need to do the recall on the car. But I'm seeing some stuff in some cars. I mean, I'm seeing chicken bones on the floorboards. I'm seeing more French fries.
Chicken bones.
Chicken bones.
Like somebody had an eight-piece meal in the parking lot.
And just decided to cast the bones on the floorboard. I'm going to tell you, here's the most interesting story. And I hate to do this because I feel like I'm outing customers, but I'm not really.
No names.
Yeah, we're not naming any names. I had a customer come in for a recall on an airbag on their car. It was one of the Takata airbags. And you have to remove the dashboard to do it. So in order to do that, you really got to pull a lot of the front interior work out to get to the car. Well, the customer pulled in. It was a guy and his girlfriend. And they got out and got out of the car, blah, blah. That's fine. And about midway through the job, the technician says, you got to come back and take a look at this car. And so I go there and I take a look. And driver's side is, it's not clean, but it's just not real nice.
It's passable.
Yeah, man, no. It wouldn't be in my house.
Not in my house.
Yeah, but the passenger seat was so filled with bags of McDonald's and Mountain Dew bottles and just random trash just piled up. And they literally were up to the glove box with garbage.
Just a level of filth.
It was just filth. And so then I thought back. I'm like, well, wait a second. I saw those people get out of the car. So that
means she sat?
Yeah. That means she sat in the passenger side with her legs sitting in the garbage.
Ew.
What is up with people? I mean, when you go to the gas station, there are trash receptacles. Now, granted, sometimes you go to a Casey's and it's full to the top.
Most of them are full to the top.
I think he would have had to have passed about 100 of those.
I think
you'd
still
find.
Yeah. It wasn't just one time. I mean, this has been going on for a couple of years.
Doesn't that smell like a house? My room in junior high.
It's McDonald's with preservatives,
exactly.
And oil,
so
encased in oil.
That is exactly right. And it's December and January in Central Illinois, so everything's freezing cold. So nothing's stinking right now. But you're literally
still.
It's so
wait.
Disgusting, folks.
Just wait.
clean out your cars. I can tell you. Well, maybe we should tell the story about the ant infestation I had in Florida, my Dodge Colt. But we'll save that for another show.
That sounds like a real, real interesting story. That
I may sound passionate on that, but folks, it's a real deal. And if you got kids, it's always kids. I don't see too many adults like this. There are a few adults, but it's generally kids. You know, I believe children of the future. You know, teach them well. Let them lead the way.
Empty out your receptacles.
Let me boomerang this for a minute. When we autocross and we tech your car, we ask you to take the floor carpet out of the driver's side so that your feet
are free.
And you don't get anything in the way, right? That chicken bone would really mess up your braking.
We got pried the wrong direction for sure.
Yeah. The Colonel's extra crispy bucket floating around the floorboards.
Daryl, you got something to upset you this week, right?
Yeah, and this is just a minor grievance. And I will preface this by saying I'm not there to be critical of auto parts store personnel. I know that's a popular thing to do now. There's all the internet memes where I need a such and such part. And it's like, what's the year, make, and model? It's a kid at a computer. And I don't want to be one of those old guys that makes fun of the kid.
That's the true reality.
Looking up parts on a computer, because that's how if you can inventory your stuff in a spreadsheet, I mean, I found stuff on Rock Auto that doesn't exist because they categorize everything. So I get that. But there's also something to be said for having a person at an auto parts place that can pull up a book off a shelf and look up an application for something you might have that's not necessarily a normal thing. So anything I've got that's for the old cars is usually kind of, oh, it's not in our computer, or, I have to have a part number when I go in there to tell them to search it up. That's fine. I'm used to that. But what I did, I actually had the starter and the alternator off my Tahoe when I was troubleshooting what the heck was going on with everything. And I pulled them off because every auto parts store from O'Reilly to Napa to AutoZone will do all the free testing of all the electrical components. When I was a kid, when I had a generator on my 64 Chevy and stuff wasn't working right and I wanted to make sure it was that, not the battery, I took it off, brought it into the Napa, the guy put it on a bench, had multimeter probes and stuff, boom, test it out, we're good. Well, nowadays, they've recently, apparently all the big chain stores, Advance, O'Reilly, all them, they've basically taken any kind of electrical diagnostic setup and they've relegated it to kind of the back corner near the brake lathe with a lot of these other dying arts. Where it's like, just, hey, every so often, a car is going to need an alternator. A car is going to need a set of rotors. Or nobody turns rotors anymore. Nobody tests these things.
Disposable culture.
Everything is just like, yeah, we'll just get you a new one.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but if you're talking $300-$400 for a starter, I want you to test mine before I just throw out the money. So instead of having any kind of a test system, they basically have a laptop on a cart, and it's got a little program that spools up. And before you put the alternator on there, doesn't matter if it's for a BMW, a Chevy, a Renault, doesn't matter what it's for, there's no way to test it with this software program that interfaces with it unless you have a factory part number or a part number for that device.
It just won't show voltage at all.
No, it won't. So you actually have to put in a part number. So if you have something that's older that doesn't have the tag on it anymore, you're screwed. And then you have to come find something that's close, and then they'll get the software program to run. But then at the end, it just says pass or fail, a big red or a big green. There's no like 12.8 volt output. Here's how many amps you got going on, or how much current draw you have. No, it's just a pass or fail. So we've taken something that take a little bit of skill back in the day, and now it's just a B, yes, no. It's just all or nothing. Which, I guess it still works. At the end of the day, you can still see if your stuff's broken or not. But I don't know. There was something about having to have three different auto parts store employees to try to hook this thing up and then get the stupid software program.
So that was the picture you sent me. You're like, how many employees does it take?
Yeah. And I didn't, again, I'm not trying to rip on the dudes at the store, but it's like we've now taken something that was pretty simple. We've dumbed it down even more, and now nobody can use it.
But I think you alluded to the future of this industry anyway. I mean, by saying they put it in the far corner, it's a dying art.
Yeah.
And the fact is, testing of this stuff for free is going away.
I'm with you there.
Yeah.
I think that it will probably be a couple years.
Well, and so is the idea of machining a disc brake or something, or a drum brake, and resurfacing it, because that takes a little bit of skill. You can't quite automate that.
Or it requires a manufacturer to make it serviceable, which most manufacturers don't even want their rotor serviced anymore.
Yeah, they actually said, well, is it because of a metal fatigue? Because the iron isn't as good a quality?
It's arguable that's the issue. They made them to be one-time use, and that's it.
Well, but one-time use is how many miles? I mean, isn't that 70,000 miles typically or something like that?
Usually. I think I put rotors on my last daily driver at about 70,000, 80,000. And they really weren't that bad. I just, put new ceramic pads, everything on. I was like, I might as well just do it all.
And why? Because they were, $100 a piece or thereabouts?
Yeah.
And nowadays that feels disposable, right?
It does, sadly.
I don't know.
I wish for a simpler time.
This is why we started this segment, Dean, so Daryl could get out his front yard and yell at the kids.
Get off my lawn. Just kidding. All right, so let's talk about happy stuff. We're going to spend some imaginary money that we don't have, right?
Yeah, this is when we break out the virtual checkbooks. Daryl and I probe all of the internet websites where you might find a car, whether it's Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, or bring a trailer, or whatever site you prefer.
Sure.
Or Hemmings.
Hemmings makes it on there, too.
So this week, this car keeps popping up on mine, and my son and I had admired it. So I'm going to hop right into this, Daryl. Sorry.
Okay. Go for it. No, do it.
So this is a 1929 Mercedes, or is it? It only has 12 miles on the odometer. Anyway.
Well, this is one of those kit cars?
Didn't they only have three-digit odometers on?
100 miles is done.
Possibly. So on Facebook Marketplace right now, there is this little white, what they call a 29 Mercedes. It's a square stock chassis. It's got a four-cylinder standard trans, a Ford. And it's got new tires, runs and drives. Needs card work, which I didn't know what that meant. Needs brakes bled. Have a couple tops. Just don't have time to install it. They're asking $3,800 or best offer for this thing. So this is one of those cars. My son is 15. I show it to him. Of course, he wants a VW thing. He wants...
He likes the eccentric
stuff.
He
does like the eccentric stuff, and I think there's something about that. But so I look at this. I'm like, well, first off, is it card work or carb work? If it needs carb work, that's a whole different issue. But you were saying maybe card work is actually... It just door interior panels, trims?
Yeah, internal?
I've heard people started referring to, I got to replace the door cards on my old car. I'm like, door card? What the hell is a door card?
Yeah.
That's, I think a lot of British cars, British people refer to them as door cards.
Okay.
I don't know
why. We call them cards at Toyota, too.
Do you?
But anyway, my biggest thing is with this car. So this guy bought this car, and he built it and did whatever, and I see these cars a lot online. $3,800 doesn't sound like that bad of money. But first off, it's not practical. You look at this car. It's just basically your Sunday driver. Maybe Sunday at 1 o'clock, get out of it at 4 o'clock.
Sure.
Are they more fun to look at than they are to drive? That is my question when you buy something like this.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
That's a solid yes for Dean.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you driven anything like this?
Never.
Would you drive anything like this?
So it's not a valid answer, Dean. You have no experience.
So to me, this seems like a boat. You know what they say about a boat? The best boat to have is your neighbor's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the one you just sold.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's two happy days in your life, right? The day I bought a boat, the day I sold a boat. Right? That's what this feels like.
But it looks like so much fun.
I agree.
Yeah. All right.
I think they would be fun. You used to see these in the 70s. These things were in their prime when anybody could take a VW chassis and then throw it in something cool like this, like the, what was the other one? The fake. They had some sports car looking thing that they made. Not the Bricklin. It was that's something else. Uh-huh. Anyways, there was some other like sports car kit you could use one of these. It was neat, but at the same time, you drive it a couple times a year, put it back in the garage, and that's about it. I
need the room that would take up. You know,
well, you need more acres, Dean. Come on,
that's right.
I did. I tried. Didn't work. Another story.
All right. So that was my fun car of the week, Daryl. What do you got going on?
I dig it. Also, in a similar theme, I'm going with the old stuff here. Sam Lehman Ford has a really nice '71 Chevy Monte Carlo right now on their used lot. Occasionally, they'll have some real high end, kind of older cars. Someone either trades in from a collection or a low mileage original. This thing's a beautiful car. It's kind of a humble. It's not the real muscle car like Monte Carlo SS with a big block in it or anything. It's got that real cool 70s, almost like a beige sandalwood color, and then that 70s vinyl interior. But it's just a beautiful, nice old coupe. And since they ride on the Chevelle chassis, you can pretty much find anything you need suspension-wise or part-wise. So not a bad buy, I think, for $18,988.
I don't know, $20,000 for a 71 Monte Carlo?
I don't know. You should see what the Chevelles were going for years ago. I don't know. Maybe the market's gone down a little bit.
Hey, you put some decent tires on this, and you can put in Cam T. T for traditional. Classic American muscle traditional.
Oh, really?
That's you can come out and autocross that car.
Really?
Yeah, you're gonna wiggle like a boat in that.
Well, there was, when I was there in Rantoul last year, there was a big black old American muscle car. I don't know what that thing was, but
was it a Cougar? With lots of patina on it.
Yeah, lots of patina.
Yeah, that's Kyle.
I took some pictures of it.
That's Kyle Beaumont. He runs Scram Speed over in Mohammed.
That car was a blast.
Like he's 69, building 69.
Yeah, he's
nine.
Building that car a little more. Got better tires. He's coming back.
Yeah.
Yes, he's very excited about it.
And one thing I'll say about Lehman's is they called me a couple of years ago because they had an FJ40 they'd bought, and they're buying some classic cars. Actually, in the Peoria, up in Pioneer Park, they had a couple in what used to be one of their old dealerships. They had a couple classic cars. I think they're kind of buying these things as they find deals on them.
Okay.
So this could be a purchase car. It could be a trade, depending on what you find on their Carfax.
Interesting.
You know, I'm getting to know the Sam Lehman Chevy dealer down here in Bloomington, and I'll come in and chat with them periodically. They always have something unusual at the back of the showroom.
Yeah.
They'll have an old motorcycle, an old pickup, an old car, something that they've traded.
Somebody there is a car guy,
yeah,
I think, because they're getting some weird stuff every once in a while, it seems like.
Yeah, the place in Morton had a couple of really nice old 60s 4x4 Chevys that were just impeccably restored. And there was also, is there one in Eureka?
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's
a different family.
Well, it's a sister. Yeah, it's different.
They had an old Suburban, like an old classic Suburban out there I looked at one time.
Oh, I bet you were jonesing for that.
Yeah, it was a little more than I wanted to spend, but it was a nice truck.
Dean, you're in on this game. What'd you find?
Well, apparently I didn't know all the rules.
Oh, yeah,
so
you got to find one that's actually for sale. Sorry.
Well, I actually, both of these cars, okay. Right. I have two choices, right?
Yeah,
because
it's hard to make up your mind.
It really is.
He's a man of means. He's getting ready to retire. He can take them both.
Yeah, fixed income later. How am I going to get my... 1970 Skylark GSX.
Beautiful car.
Typically, you see it in yellow with black stripes, kind of that bumblebee Camaro look.
This makes me want to get a Skylark.
Yeah.
I drove that 68, and I just fell in love with the GSX. That's back when GM was trying to do the Daytona, you know, the stock car. They had to have 500 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the GSX was a 500-unit build so that they could race it.
The homologation special kind of?
Yeah, yeah. It was on that medium platform that the Chevelle was on at the time, and there was Oldsmobiles and Pontiacs. There's all kinds of cars on this platform, but there's resto versions of them that just look like, and they stick the logos on. Those are running between $40,000 and $60,000. And I'm finding these. You know, you do a quick Google search. There's nothing local, but Florida seems to have a lot. Mecum Auctions, you know, different auction sites have got them. There's still factory original 70 and 71 GSXs available. $85,000 though.
Oh, that's rich.
That's wrong
to me. Will that fit in your little third garage there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just now
the vet's
one of those lifts.
Now the vet is pretty flat. You know, I could get a 4-post lift, lift it up.
Yeah.
And run this big tall Skylark underneath it.
Yeah. 6 foot tall.
It's a car. It's 6 foot tall. Yeah.
Those, I don't know if this is true or not, but I read somewhere that if you took a big block Chevelle LS6 SS of that same vintage and ran it against there, that this was actually, horsepower wise, it's not as high, but the torque, these things are quicker.
Yes.
And the quarter. I don't know if
that's
true.
This is back in the time also when I think GM was being very, very conservative with their public numbers for their horsepower. Everything on their muscle block lineup, their muscle car lineup, was making way more horsepower than they were saying it was.
Oh, it's only 300 horse, wink, wink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 400. Yeah, yeah.
Nobody does that anymore. Now they all lie the opposite direction.
Yeah, but you know, it's crazy to me to think that 40, 45 years ago, almost 50 years ago, same displacement motor, same kind of horsepower, same. What have we done in the last 40 or 50 years?
Well, now it just starts every time.
Yeah, it's a little more reliable.
Okay.
A little more reliable.
Okay. Point taken. Okay. So with that segue, my second car is...
Because you need a daily. This would be your fun car, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't know. That's seating for six in that car,
that's
really
true. Two bench seats?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I've become a Corvette guy. I really have.
It's okay.
It's funny how late in life you got that, because do you have the vet package with the jean shorts and the white New Balance tennis shoes?
I was waiting.
No,
for that.
My wife made me burn it.
Yeah, it came with the car.
Yeah, it did. It was a special little
these
suitcase
are your jean
in the back.
Your GM authorized jean shorts.
The gold chain I get to keep.
Dean, you got a great sense of humor. I love it.
Yeah. But, I pulled out for the very end. You know, I had to wait to attack him until the very end of the show.
See how this goes.
So I love how every generation of Corvette gets better and better and better. Yes, they get to be a little bit more luxurious. They ride better. They feel better. The brakes are better. The motor's better. I'm covering for him.
Yeah. Keep talking.
I really like the C6. I had no idea that this car was this nice when I, you know, my mother had friends or bosses who had Corvettes, and she got to ride them. Oh, the things ride like a truck. I hate them. They're cool looking, but I hate riding it, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'd do 10,000 miles in this car with no trouble. But Z06, the C6 Z06, oh, that 7-liter LS... what is it? LS7, I think. Oh, man, that would be so much fun. All naturally aspirated, 505 horsepower. Was it 490 foot-pounds of torque? Just...
They've got a wonderful sound, too, because whatever cam is in them, they've got that's a popular swap, isn't it? The LS7 cam.
It is.
And
it is.
Springs and all that.
Takes you out of stock class, though, and puts you into prepared class.
Yeah, with my Celica.
How do you...
Yes. Oh, it's a different prepared class.
Different prepared,
right?
I mean, that's a fair matchup. Yeah, so how would you enforce that? Just not trying to enforce cheating, but
so remember, you're racing with a bunch of car people.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
can hear it.
They know.
And
that
they
ain't
will
a stock
ask
cam.
Now. In an independent club, we let you self class, so you're going to get away with it for a little while.
Okay.
Right. And if you really want to be that person, then be that person. But otherwise, you know, fess up.
Scouts
where you're supposed to.
We have that. We have that problem at Pinewood Derby.
People
right?
People put cheater cars in the regular grudge matches, at the base level. But then by the time they get to sectionals and they move up, they're like, they get thrown out for cheating and they have an outrage. They have, well, it got passed through the garage at, you know,
yeah, at our, in my local troop.
Come on, yeah, man. You know, your troop doesn't, no, it's so ridiculous. People freak out on this.
Even
stuff.
Peoria, CIR, self-class, run whatever you want. But if you move up to a regionals or a pro tour or the nationals, folks are going to be kind of looking up your butt and inspecting things, right?
Yeah, sure. Good for them. Again, scout's honor. You know, you know what you did. So
do the right thing.
Yeah, why would you be that guy?
So really, my other Corvette love would be the C7 Z06. I got a buddy out at Champaign that lets me drive his in anger on occasion. And we will co-drive his.
I don't have an anger car. I need an anger car.
That's our code name for, you know, competitive racing, okay, competitive driving it. I love that car. That thing is so cool. Apparently, I am getting good enough at this. I don't know. I don't want to sound like that.
No, no.
But I can feel the supercharger coming in.
I told you he's a pro.
I can feel the supercharger coming in. And when it's not and how it's behaving, it's like, ooh, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. You know that. Well, you know the chassis real well. I mean, yes, you've got something that's somewhat comparable, and you kind of know what's going on.
Well, Daryl, other than rear-wheel drive, they're completely different cars.
Yeah.
Completely different. They're spelled the same, completely different.
Okay.
They really are.
Yeah.
In fact, almost every generation, I think the C5, C6 are about the closest two generations together because some of the parts are interchangeable.
Okay.
But you look at the other generations, GM re-envisions the Corvette for every new generation.
Cool. That's cool. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, you guys said one, I said three, so.
Yeah, whatever. You'll learn. Next
deep
show,
pockets over here.
Next show, you'll be scanning Craigslist, finding the perfect car. We know.
It'll be a Miata.
All right.
It could be.
I think that's everything we got for this episode of Throwing Wrenches.
Yeah. Dean, thanks so much for letting us into your home and for sharing a lot of your insight and knowledge about the club, rather, and some of the courses and how you put things together. We'll hopefully try to make it to one event, at least as a spectator.
So just remember, to come in the gate to the event, you have to sign a waiver, which means you can also put on a helmet and be in the co-pilot seat.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody can just
so
walk
anybody, in. Anybody yeah. can. Yeah, it's great. Now, please be respectful. Not every driver will take a rider, right?
But a lot will.
Find me. If my seat's empty, jump in. That's my rule. Everybody knows.
So if you walk up to one of these events at Rantoul and you can't figure out who it is, it's probably the guy speaking the loudest with everybody paying attention to him. That's probably Dean.
That's either me or David Finch if he's there. Okay. You know, he's from Tri-State. All right. So, yeah.
We'll look for you.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to having you again some other time. For all you folks listening, thanks for tuning in.
I'm Daryl Scott.
I'm Eric Stahl.
Dean Plumador.
We'll see you next time.